Hello and welcome to the Feedback Force podcast, the game design analysis podcast of the End Defender community. We are back. Hello, I'm Kelso.
And I'm Kyla.
And I'm Carl.
How have y'all been?
And before we get too deep into our, our weeks, I actually want to start with a addendum caveat epilogue type thing to Road 96 from last time. Because even though we spent like 2 hours heaping praises on this game, I actually forgot to say a thing. And it's a non-praise thing, and it's a thing that if you are thinking of playing it based on our podcast, you might want to know, which is that I forgot to mention that that was a ginger ale game for me.
Was it?
Okay. Oh, I see.
Yeah. It's a first-person game, and it has a head bob which you cannot turn off. And there are several times where it grabs the camera and wildly swings it around, such as any time you get in and out of like a sleeping situation or like a vehicle or things, or especially in the few scenes where they have you dance. Like, the dancing is like unwatchable. I had to turn my head to the side because they just grab the camera and like shake it all over the place and like tilt it and twist it. And it was a lot. So if you are going to play Road 96 because we liked it so much, do keep in mind that if you get easily motion sick in first-person games, you might need to take some precautions.
That's a good call. Yeah. Side note, does Dramamine help with games, or does that like overkill, or do you not like to take Dramamine?
I've never taken Dramamine. I tend to like to take like the minimum possible medication for any given thing.
Yeah, that's fair. So
I try and take natural stuff instead of they're
bringing
all
out
chemicals.
The big guns.
Yeah, they're all chemicals, but yeah, I tend to take like ginger based stuff. So and the ginger helps well enough that I don't feel the need to go stronger. But
also it's delicious. So I don't blame you.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good note.
That's my little PSA, and I had been thinking it as we were playing, and then I completely forgot to mention it on the podcast last time. So.
We just had so much to talk about.
We did. It was long.
It was a long one. I don't know. It's nice when we have a lot of just things to say sometimes, though.
Yeah, we'll see if I don't think that's gonna happen this week, but
nope.
We'll see.
I'm just happy that I built up that game so much in my head before we played it, because it really felt like a game that I would love. And then Road 96.
Oh yeah.
And then it was actually a game I really enjoyed.
It's nice when that happens.
I know. It's nice when you're pleasantly, not even surprised, but when you're pleasantly validated of your own hopes and dreams.
Yeah. So. No, yeah. It's you can check on the timestamp for this podcast, and either you will see that exactly what we're talking about, or we just engaged in some like real dramatic irony just now by saying it's a short episode. We'll find out which of the two is true.
Only us from the future and also listeners from the future know the answer to that question. Yep. Right now, it's impossible to say. So,
yep. Do you ever get the feeling when you're doing a daily task that like you're like an episode or two behind on your life, and like the thing you're about to do for like the next few hours or whatever is sort of like already predetermined? And is a thing that's technically in the past, and you're just experiencing it now, like you're watching, you know, an episode of a show where the next three have already come out.
No, are you okay?
This has happened to me a couple times recently. I think it happens when I binge a lot of content that I'm like not caught up on, and I'm just stewing in that feeling of like, oh, this is me getting caught up. This is a thing that happens in the past. Sometimes it bleeds over into my daily life a little bit, which is weird.
I don't have that, but I have like the problem of I'll go through several hours or like just like repetitive tasks or things that I do a lot, and just that time is gone. I have no recollection of it happening. I know I did the things, but I don't remember how. I don't have like memory of the actual mechanics, which is fun. It's not, but you know, what are you gonna do?
Nah.
Interesting how we process things, I guess.
Yeah, it's like when you if you watch like an animated thing. This happens to me all the time. If I watch an animated show for a while, like I binge that, and then I read something, all my internal visuals of the thing I'm reading are in the style of whatever I watched for a little bit.
Oh yeah, I've definitely experienced that, which is kind of fun. But
yeah, it's a little. Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it's annoying because I'm like, no, this is like a serious thing that I'm reading. I don't want it to be cute and cartoony.
I mean, yeah, I guess that's dependent on the style of whatever you were watching.
Yeah.
I was about to say animation can be serious, but I mean, you know that.
Yeah.
We all know that.
We all know that. I'm thinking more like if I'm watching like a bunch of Steven Universe or whatever, and then, you know, I switch to like reading Good Omens fanfic and everyone's like a weird stylized chibi and I'm like, this is not what I wanted.
It's so funny that you said Steven Universe, because as I was like thinking about that, I also went to Steven Universe, which is wild, because I haven't watched very much Steven Universe at all. I've been thinking I need to, but...
It's good.
It seems
solid.
Good.
I recommend it. And then comes the movie, and then comes Steven Universe Future, which is all about the fallout and PTSD that Steven experiences from going through the main series.
Oh yeah, that sounds... It seems like not a more childish version of, I mean, I guess it starts out that way and then gets heavier and heavier, of like Hosuke no Kuni, or I think, what's the English translation? Land of the Lustrous. The one where all the, it's like,
oh,
gem girls, and it gets real fucked up. I haven't actually watched it, but I've read the manga, and oh boy. Ooh.
Yeah, I watched the first season of that because that was all that was out when we watched it, and it ends on kind of a cliffhanger, and it's just dour AF. Like, bad shit keeps happening. It's like, here's
happy-go-lucky
girl who, you know, is like the one person among her people who's like really optimistic and bright-eyed and believes in goodness. Watch the world crush her to pieces.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how far the first season gets, but oh man, it only gets worse. It only gets worse from there.
Yeah. So I think somebody was kidnapped by a giant undersea crab person or something, is my recollection of where it ended. The Steven Universe is sort of that in a positive, like, you know, there's one person who approaches everything with like peace and good feelings, and maybe we can just work this out by talking, and he is correct, and that is the good thing to do, and it is celebrating him.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like the positive version of that. But yes,
yeah, that's
it is
definitely
about gemstone people. And there's some really rad as hell world building in that series. So
yeah, I know a little bit about kind of what it ends up as, and the more I find out about it, the more I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have slept on Steven Universe. Maybe the tone of like the earlier seasons kind of put me off it.
Yeah, it does take, I will say, like a handful of episodes to get going, and there are, you know, here and there still some episodes that are kind of like, okay, this is a kids show, like, here are some kids show episodes, but, once it, like, really finds its footing, it gets real solid. There's some good stuff in there.
Yeah, seems like it.
Yeah. If I am low energy for this podcast, it is because it is daylight savings this morning. I literally like rolled out of bed and 20 minutes later we're podcasting. It's like, I did not sleep enough last night. I also like stupidly stayed up way later than I should.
No, it's all because of the daylight savings.
Yeah, but I'm happy to blame it on daylight savings.
Yeah. It's the worst. I wish we could just stay in the same time all year.
They almost did that. There was like, it went to, I think it passed the house or whatever.
Yeah, but they were doing it wrong. We've talked about this.
It doesn't matter. Just stop doing it one way or the other, please.
Yeah, I would rather have. I mean, I'm a staunch standard time advocate, mm-hmm. and I know Kylie, you disagree, and I understand and respect your reasons, but I also would rather just have it be daylight savings all year around, so that we don't have to fucking keep changing times.
Yeah, I've also come around to standard in that, like, you know, it would fuck up our relationship with world time zones slightly less if we did that.
Yeah, that's a lot true, yeah.
But also, like, either one is fine. Just stop changing it on us, please. I'm so tired.
Yeah. And then every time daylight savings rolls around in the spring, I also have to hear my boyfriend complain about people complaining about it. Because for some reason, he's just like, it's not that big of a deal. You just have to do it and it's fine. I'm like, shut up. This sucks. You suck. Yeah.
I'm that person.
Carl doesn't want to hear any of our lip. You have it in a few weeks, right, Carl?
Yeah.
So okay. You get to look forward to it.
Yeah. This is a taste of things to come. You'll be complaining in a couple weeks.
That's actually the most annoying thing, is that we don't switch at the same time.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes things real difficult. And I can't imagine how much it sucks for people in, what state is it? Arizona, I think, doesn't have daylight savings time.
Yeah, Arizona just banned it entirely and they just chill.
I mean, good for them. But also, how annoying for the entire country to suddenly change time around you. And you're just chilling.
But what if it was always 2 p.m.?
Then that'd be real weird in the middle of the night.
That would suck because I would always be at work. Like, I'm supposed to be at work at 2 o'clock. I don't want to be there all the time.
Yeah. World time zones is one of those, like, hideously messy programming problems. Where, like, it's the thing that, like, programmers absolutely, utterly hate to deal with. Because, like, every country has their own rules and their own times they switch over, and, like, sometimes the relationships between this one, and sometimes it's this one, and what about leap years, and it's really fucked up. It's a mess.
Yeah, I believe it. What are you gonna do?
Anyway, after this today, I am going to go see Kung Fu Panda 4. Did you know there's a Kung Fu Panda 4?
There's a 2?
Oh no, I keep seeing ads for it all over the place, and it's just Jack Black being cute as fuck, can I just say.
Yeah, I
have a huge crush on Jack Black, by the way, just getting that out there. But I know I've seen the second one. I don't think I've seen the third one. I'm not sure I was aware of it.
I'm seeing the fourth one in theaters with the same person I saw the third one with in theaters. So,
oh, okay.
Because, like, she's kind of a fan of the franchise, and I like, you know, animation, and I was surprisingly, like, I liked the third one a lot more than I thought I was going to. So I'm like, I've literally seen one trailer on mute for the fourth one. It, like, I had no idea they were even making a fourth one, and then when we were recording for Blue California last week, as I was, like, the Twitch stream was booting up, I got served an ad, and it was a trailer for this, and I'm like, there's a fourth one? It's coming out this weekend? And so I messaged my friend, and we're gonna go see it. So I'll let you know how it is.
Yeah, for some reason I've been getting really, like, ad bombarded about it, particularly on Pinterest, I guess.
They know about your Jack Black crush.
They gotta know. They gotta know. The algo knows. Well, let me know how it is. Like I said, I don't think I've seen the second one, I don't think I've seen the third one, but I do remember watching the second one, and I think, like, granted, I was probably not doing great at the time, but I do remember just fucking sobbing at one point. Like, this shouldn't be, this is a kid's movie, why is this happening to me? Sometimes they get you. Sometimes they get you like that.
I watch a YouTube series called Cinema Therapy, which I generally recommend. It's if you want, like, if like the idea of therapy wigs you out a little bit, and you want to like learn about it in a kind of approachable way. Cinema Therapy is a channel that is co-hosted by a filmmaker and a therapist, and they pick movies and they watch them, and then they talk about some therapeutic thing related to the movie, like, you know, talk about the character's arc, or like, you know, why this situation is toxic, or like what you should do in a situation like this, or, you know, like they do some therapy based thing based on the movie. And so they did one on the entire Kung Fu Panda franchise that was about like co-parenting, because one of the you know, ongoing plot points is that Po is adopted, and in one of the later movies he meets his like biological father. So it's kind of about the, you know, how to be a parent when you know, your child has other parents in their life, and you maybe don't, you know, you maybe have some insecurity around like whether you have the right to parent if you've, you know, have been estranged until recently, and, you know, things like that. So I've now been like thinking about the franchise through that lens recently, and it's fun.
Yeah, that's very cool. I need to check out that channel. That's a great concept, especially for like for a channel. I mean, especially for like men who will do anything to avoid going to therapy, yeah. Which I have been thinking about a lot since I am like on my 2024 the Year of Remedy thing, which I did replay the first Alan Wake and American Nightmare several weeks ago. I finished those, but man, that game really do just be about a man who would rather get trapped in another dimension than do a single therapy session. holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did I already say this on the podcast? Alan fucking sucks. He's not a good guy. He's not a good dude. There's my hot take.
Okay.
And that's all I'm gonna say about it.
Oh, feel free to go on if you want. We are like all interested spectators in your Year of Remedy journey.
Oh, no, I mean, that's kind of just it. And like, granted, I think he gets something of an arc. Well, he definitely gets something of an arc later on. Like, in American Nightmare, he seems to be a much better person, but like, you're still trapped in another dimension, so you've kind of fucked up. But especially first game Alan, my god, does he suck. Just every, like, precious, self-involved man who thinks that you have to be in pain to make good art. Fuck that. Fuck that.
Yep.
Yeah, that's really it. That's really it.
That makes me think of, I don't know if you've ever seen the meme that's, like, side-by-side, quotes from, Miyazaki and Junji Ito.
Oh, I love those.
Like, Junji Ito is just actually like a really positive, optimistic, like, you know, happy with life guy, and Miyazaki is this like chain smoking cynic, and they make the like absolute inverse types of art.
That's and I've seen a couple of appearances by like other like horror mangaka.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of the guy. He was on an episode of Gaki no Tsukai where they were building they were doing like a Lego building competition. It was this other horror mangaka, and he was just like the most adorable man. But my favorite like quote from Junji Ito was when he was talking about Gyo, the one about the shark.
Oh, and, I know.
And some yes, and someone was like, "Well, what is the meaning behind, you know, the monster being a shark?" And his response was, I'm paraphrasing here, was like, "Well, I thought about how scary sharks are, because sharks are really scary. And then I thought, what would make it scarier? Well, they would be scarier if they had legs and they could go on land." And that's it. That's the story, baby.
Yeah. People are like, how did you think of this like man shark monster? And he's like,
is this a metaphor?
Yeah. So I thought it would be scarier if the shark could chase you on land.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Love him.
Yeah. So...
Dr. Junji Ito with his dentistry degree. Anyway, yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, cinema therapy on YouTube. I think if you just Google that, you will probably find it with Alan and what's the John? John and Alan. Very like middle-aged white guy names, but
definitely.
But, it's okay. Yeah. It's a little. My only complaint with it is it's a like. They don't integrate their advertising very well. It feels a little shilly. They like cut to like really awkward commercials, but they're easy enough to skip. So,
yeah, I've definitely seen some ad reads where it's clear, like very obvious that like I don't want to do this. You don't want to do this. I'm just gonna read the ad and get it over with, which sometimes can be funny. But I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. This is worse than that because they try and do skits.
Oh no!
I hate it when people do skits, but you know, one of them's a filmmaker. He's clearly a little creatively stifled and just wants to be making things. So it's fine.
Yeah.
Like I said, you can just scrub through it and skip to beyond. So
yeah,
it's fine.
It's so hard for those to actually land, and if they don't, it just becomes like frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a pretty firm believer in just read the copy. It's fine. That's all you have to do to get paid. Just read the copy good.
Yeah. What have they done recently? They've actually been having some filmmakers on to like discuss their movies with them, which is pretty cool. Like they had the creators of Little Miss Sunshine on.
Oh, that's a movie I haven't thought about in a really long time.
Yeah. Oh, they have the makers of Inside Out on.
Oh, cool.
About that recently.
Oh, that's another movie that I cried during.
What else have they done recently? They had The Power of Hope with the new Willy Wonka movie. They did How to, like, stand up for yourself and, like, not despair in a abusive situation with Matilda, the old school Matilda movie.
Yeah.
They also sometimes do, there's some really good ranking videos they do where they'll like recently they ranked the relationships in rom-coms. Like, here's some 90s rom-coms from like least to most healthy relationship.
Ooh, what can you remember some of the bad ones? I'm curious. Not that I've watched a ton of rom-coms, but I mean...
Let me click into the video and see if I remember. Number 5 is Pretty Woman.
As in unhealthy? Or
unhealthy.
I'm assuming unhealthy. Yeah, I'm assuming unhealthy.
Yeah. So it goes from... Pretty Woman, Never Been Kissed. Sleepless in Seattle. What's the one where the woman's like faking, like she saves a guy from a train and then like that tells him he's had amnesia and like gaslights him.
Oh, I don't remember. I think I know which one you're talking about, but I don't remember the name.
The name.
I forget. While You Were Sleeping, I think. Is that right?
Mm, that sounds right.
Yeah, and then number 1 for this list is Clueless.
Okay.
The Clueless movie. There's that. There's one that's like ranking parents from Pixar movies. How good they are as parents. Which I think number 1 is the single mom from Onward.
Oh, I haven't seen that. Which one? Oh, no, I remember which one that is. Yeah.
That's the one about the like the two troll brothers or whatever they are, going on a road trip.
Yeah,
it's not a bad movie, not like amazing, but God, speaking of sequels that like I don't know if they should exist. Apparently, they're making an Inside Out 2, which I feel a little weird about, but could be good.
Yeah, that one seems like a strange pick. I don't know. That one was pretty self-contained. I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it needs a sequel.
If they have something interesting to say about how your emotions change as you grow up, like, I'm all for that. I don't want them to, like, taint the memory of the first one. But we'll see, I guess. They've done good sequels before. Like, a Pixar sequel is not necessarily a bad thing. They've had a lot of very good sequels.
Yeah, I guess I just don't generally think of Pixar movies in terms of sequels, because so many of them are just self-contained. Which is, you know, fine. It's all fine.
But, like, Finding Dory was really great, and, you know, Toy Stories 2 and 3 were pretty good. 4 is also not bad.
I haven't seen any of those sequels.
Yeah, and I think the Cars sequels were well received, although that franchise also had like about a billion spin-off things that were like more little kid focused, so I don't know.
Isn't there like a billion Cars movies?
Yeah, I think there's 3 or 4 main franchise movies, but then there was also like a mini series about the like tow truck character, and there was like a planes spin-off franchise, I think. And yeah, there was a lot of like, hey, we're Disney, we can do, you remember Disney Channel, how we had all those TV shows? Like,
yeah, Cars made a lot of money.
Yeah, very popular with the small children's.
There's a I think it's like an auto body repair shop that like kind of a specialty place that I excuse me, that I drive by every day on my way to and from work, and they always have like very specific, I don't even know what you call them, they're like modified cars that are modified to look like vehicles from film and TV. So there's like a permanent installation of the General Lee, but it's like as though it is in midair jumping over a fucking stream or something. But for a while they had the tow truck and the Lightning McQueen cars just parked out front, and it changes, like there was a Mystery Machine there for a while. I don't know, I like driving by it and seeing what new weird shit they got out front.
Fun. That's a good way to, like, you know, give yourself a creative outlet.
It's very cool. Yeah. So, I don't know, I guess these things just, like, travel around and are exhibited in various places, and they stop off at an auto body shop in Virginia Beach for a while, I guess. It's a little weird, but it gives me something to look at on my commute, so.
Good for them.
Yeah. Are we stalling, y'all?
Yeah.
Okay. That's
a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, we did... You did say, Kyla, that there's probably not going to be a lot to talk about this one.
Yeah.
And I kind of agree. Which probably is not an indicator of quality, but...
We played Balatro. Or however you pronounce it, I don't care.
That's, you got it.
Made by Local Funk and published by Placed. And it's a deck builder. I'm not going to say it's... Like, it has poker aesthetics. It's not like poker.
Yeah, it uses poker as, like, a convenient shorthand for scoring. And that's about it. It's part of a subgenre that I've heard referred to as combo engine games, where the point is to build, like, a machine that makes exponentially larger and larger combos, basically.
It's a number go up game. Yeah.
Yeah.
And boy howdy is it a numbers go up game.
And it has some of the problems that genre often has, I would say. Which is to say, like, whether you can make the number go up correctly is based largely on the luck that you have at the very beginning when you're getting your thing set up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like in that first set of matches is really when your whole thing is going to be decided. I very rarely found myself switching cards out after like the first two rounds, but we can talk about the structure, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's effectively, I don't know as much about poker as I should. So, but poker is just the set dressing. You basically have a series of like rounds, battles, I don't know, that increase in the amount of points you need to get to proceed to the next one. And every third one is like a boss fight. So there's some condition to the round that is designed to hinder you. With
some special case problem.
Yeah, with varying levels of severity. And you have your regular cards. You can put modifiers on your regular cards. You can have way more than a standard deck of 52 cards.
Yeah. So I would break it down by like kind of type of thing. So it starts with you have standard poker hands that score a certain number of chips, which are your base points, times some multiplier, and the multiplier goes up based on how rare the hand is. But instead of just drawing from a regular deck, the deck changes over time. You can there are regular standard cards which can be added. So if you can like open a card pack and like, oh, here's another Ace of Spades. Let me add another Ace of Spades to my standard 52 card deck to make a 53 card deck. And so on. There are modification cards, which are tarot, which let you do things like, I'm going to transform this card to, you know, like three of my cards to hearts cards, or I'm going to increase the rank of this card, or I'm going to make this card have a special multiplier, or things like that. There's spectral cards, which are kind of like tarot cards, but like with huge, like really far-reaching effects. Like they do kind of extreme things. There's planet cards, which rank up the power of different hands. So you can say, like, actually, you know, full houses are worth much more right now because my full house is like level 7, whereas like it used to be straights were worth more, but straights are only, you know, level 1. So actually, you know, my two pair is at level 10, so I get tons of points for two pairs. And then perhaps most importantly, there are the jokers, which by default you get 5 joker slots. And you can, jokers just do weird things. Like they said like 150 jokers in the game, and they all do something different. So it's like, you know, you get additional multipliers for every diamond card you have, or you will get an additional like $5 to buy cards with at the end of each round, or, you know, some of them are like very extreme, like this card gains like a multiplier every round, but it does so by destroying whatever card is to its right, and so on. And some things add to your multiplier, and some things multiply your multiplier. And pretty much getting a good run, I feel like, is dependent on getting a good multiply your multiplier card.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you can do that, you will have a good run. If you cannot do that, you will not have a good run. And that's it.
I will say, what counts as a run is going to be very different from player to player. Because there is a couple of different ways to play.
Yeah, it does have some modes to it. The default is 8, what they call antes, which is a set of 3 rounds. The round being you have a limited number of hands to make it to this base score that you need. There's also voucher cards. Vouchers are, there's one voucher available per round, and they have like permanent passive effects on the game. So, you know, like increase the number of hands you're allowed to have, or the number of discards, or there's one really powerful one that's like you get one fewer hand per round, but also your ante goes down by 1. So you effectively get like lower score totals for a round so that you have another round to build up your engine, which ends up being surprisingly like useful.
Yeah, definitely. Also, I think worth mentioning is that the modifiers can also be applied to jokers. So you can have, like, for example, is it foil? There's like foil, there's multi-chrome, and it's like you get extra coins for a foil, and you get extra
foil
multipliers.
And foil holographic and polychrome are the 3, I think.
And yes. Does negative count as a multiplier that can be applied, or is that only in special cases?
Negative is it gives you, it doesn't take up a slot, is the negative power.
Yeah, so. I couldn't remember if that was a like an effect that can be applied after the fact, or if you can only just randibly have cards available.
You can apply it afterwards.
Okay. Yeah.
In certain cases, yeah. I don't think it's one of the effects that can be applied with Wheel of Fate or whatever, Wheel of Fortune tarot.
No.
But it can be applied afterwards through other means.
Okay. Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking, but I couldn't remember.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah, so if you have negative jokers, they don't take up a slot, allowing you to have more jokers, which is generally very useful.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yeah, the goal is to get through 8 antis, and that counts as quote-unquote winning, although like then they let you continue in endless mode, and you can, you know, where the pot increases exponentially each round, and so if you have like a really incredible engine that you've built, you know, you can keep going, but I found that like I beat the game I think 4 times, and I almost never went. I think I never went more than like 2 or 3 rounds after 2 or 3 antes after the thing.
Yeah, I think the highest hard. I got to was like I think I got through 9 and then died on 10.
And yeah, something like that for me.
Yeah,
as well.
Endless mode scales very very fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. And then there are also, when you start a new run, there are also modifiers that you can apply based on the color of your deck, and then you can also unlock different colors or different types of decks. So those have different effects. Like, I think one gives you, like the default ones that you start with, I think one gives you +1 hand to every round, one gives you
discard.
Like so plus red, one discard. Yeah.
The default starting one is red, which is +1 discard, and then is blue, which is +1 hand. And then is yellow, which is you start with some money. You start with like +10 money, I think. Mm-hmm. And then green, which I think was actually the first one that I won with, which is you don't get any interest, which is money that accrues at the end of each round. If you had money already, you get like up to an additional $5, one per every $5.
Every $5.
Mm-hmm. So the green deck means you don't gain interest, but instead of getting $1 per leftover hand that you have at the end of a round, you get $2 per leftover hand and $1 per leftover discard. So I found that I actually accrued money much faster that way, because I don't like having to not spend my money in order to accrue some. That seems like bad. So being able to like spend all my money on jokers and things and then still have additional money was like, that was, I think, like really, like really positive.
Yeah, the lack of interest on your existing money really gets canceled out very quickly when you're able to complete every round in a single hand, and then you've just got all those hands worth left of money, all those discards worth left of money. So, green was my preferred deck color as well, out of like the basic ones.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and those were the 4 that I beat the game with, so I haven't like experimented that much with the others.
Yeah, neither have I.
And it's, I mean, we can talk about some of the cool combos that we got. It's got like some pretty juicy UI. It's ultimately like there's not a lot to this game. It's kind of shallow, I feel like.
Yeah, it's very mindless. Once you get into the groove, once you know the mechanics and kind of how to play it, it's you're just picking out cards and watching the numbers go up and occasionally making a decision, which is not to say that it's a bad game. I mean I sunk like 4 hours into it in a sitting without realizing it. It's like, oh shit, 4 hours has gone by, fuck.
Yeah, it's very compelling when you're playing it. But it's like, I played it, I tried to start early. I'm like, I'm going to start this early and, you know, get this done. And I played it a lot like the first week. And then by the end of the second week, I was like, Oh, right. We have a podcast game. I completely forgot it even existed. I should probably play more of this. It, like, did not stick in my brain at all afterwards.
So
yeah, I see that.
I played this a lot right after last recording.
Mm-hmm.
And then I played it an unhealthy amount. And then I kind of just decided I was finished with it.
Yep. That sounds about right. Because I think one of the biggest problems with it is it does not have any centralized progression. So, like, any structure of, like, oh, the goal is to get to blank is self-imposed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can decide, oh, I want to try and win once with each deck, or I want to try and, like, collect all the cards, or, like, right? There's a lot of things that you could use as sort of a benchmark, but the game doesn't particularly encourage any of them. And other than, like, unlocking cards, which we've talked about before, is not really a reward in a roguelike, all it does is dilute the pool of choices that, you know, makes it less likely for you to get the thing that you've become used to relying on.
I will say that you don't dilute the pool in this game by unlocking.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
Everything is unlocked from the start. You only unlock it in, like, the menu, so you can see it.
That's not true. Like, some of the jokers and stuff can't come up on rotation until you've unlocked them, right?
You sure about that?
I'm not 100%.
I know you unlock legendary jokers by getting them in a run.
Yeah. That's a good question.
There's definitely some stuff that unlocks by, like, this unlocks when you've spent X amount of dollars in the shop, and, like, this voucher unlocks after you've played this many times and things like that.
Yeah, that is true. Like, the voucher, I know, at least.
Yeah, so there are some things that, like, unlock by you've played a bunch and done a bunch of different things. So, like, that is a goal that you could have if you wanted. But by and large, it's, like, it's up to you to decide what your progression is, because other than unlocking, you gain nothing from continued playthroughs. It's just a see how high I can make the number go up and then do it again.
Yeah.
That really... I don't know.
It doesn't make for a game that keeps me coming back. For something like this, it's like I get the satisfaction of having, won a couple of runs, and it's like, okay, well, that's fine. I've done it. I don't need to play it anymore.
Yeah.
Opposed to something like, you know, Loop Hero, which we talked about, you know, has explicit progression. Even outside of the runs, there are things going on that hold over, and there is a sense of progression in terms of, like, you know, things that you are able to do and how easy the runs are and how much support you have. And there's none of that here. It's just the numbers go up in the game, and then the numbers go up on, like, your card collection screen that you get on your main menu that shows you all the cards you've unlocked and discovered. But that's about it.
And
getting extra game, like, modes.
You do unlock deck and challenges.
Yeah.
And higher difficulties.
But I don't care about that.
Yeah.
That's not compelling for me personally. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. And I get that people do care about that. People do care about, like, well, the game is more difficult now, so it's more of a challenge. Like, they like the ramping challenge. That doesn't do it for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because I've been just randomly rewatching a playthrough of Hades that a streamer that I like did, and it's a sharp contrast because Hades is, like, probably one of the best roguelikes in terms of having forward progression that makes you feel like you're going somewhere, because every time you come back there's, like, new dialogue to see in the base area, and, like, you're constantly unlocking new mechanics in a way that's, like, exciting to try and experiment with them. When I unlock new cards in this game, I was like, well, add that to the pile, I guess, because it's not going to change my strategy in any way. The strategy is still get good times multiplier jokers.
Yeah.
You know, ideally get one of those things very early on that makes everything free in the shop when you skip a blind. And then, you know, then you're good. And yeah, that's not going to change. So
I'm curious as to, like, I don't know, I guess how people are, like, theory crafting builds, because I think it seems like all of us kind of had the same strategy, which is just get good multipliers. Because there's a lot of cards that do, I mean, a lot of jokers that do a lot of other stuff that is interesting and cool as you play the game, but ultimately it just never beats out, here's a big multiplier. So I'm curious to see, like, what other actually viable strategies that people who are smarter than me have come up with.
The run that I beat most recently, I had the Joker that makes it so that all black cards count as the same suit and all red cards count as the same suit. And then I had I had the cards that gave me multipliers for diamonds and the card that gave me multipliers for hearts. And I was drawing, because of some other stuff I had applied, I was drawing 9 cards per hand. So I automatically drew a flush every single time.
Oh, nice.
Right? Because 9 cards means you have to have 5 of one of the 2 colors. So basically just every time I got red flushes, my thing went off. But the thing is, I also had a multiplier that multiplied based on the number of cards you had added to your deck, like 0.25 times mult per card you've added to your deck. And that was really doing a lot of heavy lifting as well. So,
yeah, I had a similar situation where I had the Joker that lets you get a straight or a flush with only 4 cards instead of 5. And then I also had the Joker that allows you to skip a card in your run of straights, which was a really good combo.
Yeah,
but
those are,
I've
had that combo before as well. That's a good combo.
Yeah, I like that combo a lot, but unfortunately that run I did not acquire the multipliers that I needed to carry myself forward, which really felt like kind of a waste. Like, okay, here's this cool synergy that I have figured out, but I don't have the multipliers to support the scoring that I need, you know?
Yeah.
Which feels a little bit like a disappointment when you do find something cool, but it's cool, but it's not good enough to get.
Yeah, it's not optimal.
Yeah, exactly.
Enough.
It's not optimal enough. That's the word. Yeah.
Yeah. My best combo by far was the vampire, which increases the multiplier whenever you play an enhanced card, but removes the enhanced effect. And then I also had the, when you play a suit card.
A face card.
I mean, it also turns it into a gold card.
Oh, that I had that one once. That was a fun one.
So I keep dropping like 2 pairs with those, and ended up doing like I got to the trillions.
Oof!
Nice.
I never.
Yeah, that's
that
pretty
high.
Good. That ain't bad. That ain't bad at all.
But there's still so much further in the game.
It ramps up, like, seriously exponentially once you get past the 8 antes, and it's supposedly there are some combos that go, like, crazy, crazy high, but let me see if I can find okay, so I was noting here I wrote it, because some friends and I had a thread on the Discord, because everybody's playing Velatro. So one of my best hands, it looks like I had, so I had the 4 fingers, which is the one you talked about, where flushes and straights can be made with only 4 cards, shortcuts, where straights can be made with single card gaps, throwback, which gives a 0.25 multiplier for each blind that you skipped, which for me, it was at times 3, blueprint, which copies the abilities of the Joker to its right. So, like, I could just get a copy of my multiplier. Blackboard, which I had as negative, which is a times 3 multiplier if all the leftover cards after playing your poker hand are spades or clubs. So as long as you, and I had a very black heavy deck in that run. And then baseball, which is a times 1.5 mult for every uncommon joker, which I had three of.
Mm-hmm. I love baseball. It's so good. Yeah.
Baseball's great.
Yeah, and so I had at one point my number multiplier was over 4,000, so it was chip based times 4,000 something.
Yeah, the cards that I had when I the first time I won a run were actually pretty standard. I don't think I had any like times multipliers. I had two red jokers, which go up by three multiplier every time you open up a booster pack and then don't take any cards out of it. So I had two of those, which by the time I got to the eighth ante were up to like 100 plus 100 multiplier per card. And then I had, and then I had a couple that give you a bunch of chips. I don't remember which ones those were, but I had a couple that give you a bunch of chips. So you've got like a big bump to what number is being multiplied. And then the last card I got right before the last boss, which was, if you sell this card, it negates the boss effect. So that boss one just ends up being a regular round. So I basically, you sell it right away, and then you just have big multipliers, and that's how I won that first round. I don't remember my other. I think I only won two. I didn't play this as much as I should have, but... yeah, it's, yeah, just number go up.
Yep.
That's all.
I feel like this game could have really benefited from something like, maybe not as intense as Inscription, but just like a Trombone Champ level of, like, secret hidden mystery thing in the background.
Yeah, I could have done
if you found, like, these four hidden cards, like, you unlock a secret mystery that's going on, right? Like, something to compel a little bit more interest.
I was expecting something like that, but it never popped off, unfortunately. Yeah. I don't know, I just, to give any shits about a roguelike, and especially a deck builder, like, there just has to be some kind of narrative inducement for my brain to latch onto it, otherwise I just can't make myself care.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Something narrative, or at the very least, something that encourages experimentation, right? Because if your main forward progression is the fact that you unlock new things, then you need those new things you need to have a compelling reason to try and experiment with those new things.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, like, it's any new thing you get is not going to change what is effective about this game. So what's the point of unlocking anything?
And I guess that's where challenge modes come in, and where the, like, higher stake difficulties come in, is, like, I guess, theoretically, you might need to change up your tactics, but I didn't explore that much,
like...
so who knows? Yeah, I didn't explore that much, so I don't know if that's actually the case. I think that would make it more compelling if it did make you switch up your tactics, but...
I mean, challenges definitely do, because you start with, like, permanent jokers or different settings, and...
That's maybe interesting, I guess.
Yeah.
I feel like there are probably some people for whom this is the ideal game, right? Who want something that's purely mechanical, who love combo engine games, and for whom this is like an ideal thing. But for me, it feels like very compelling for, you know, a few hours of like learning how the systems work, and then like I will probably never play this again.
Probably, like, the fact that it's so easy to start up is what really makes this a great game to me. And
I will say this for it, the shortness of its loop is very compelling. The fact that it only takes you, like, a minute or two to do a round, like, that's real nice hop-on, hop-off. Like, you feel like you're constantly, like, moving forward. That's why it's easy to, like, oh, I'm going to sit down and play Bellatro. Oh, 4 hours have gone by and I did not realize.
Yeah.
They went by in 2 minute chunks.
Mm-hmm. And you've always got time for like, oh, well, I'll just do like one more round. Or I'll just, you know, I'll see if I can get past this boss. Very low time investment for the incremental chunks of it, at the very least.
Yeah.
Which adds up.
But, sorry, Carl, I did not mean to interrupt you there.
I'm not sure you did. But I can add on, like, a big gripe I have, which is more of an annoyance. If you want to unlock decks, it's usually by playing a higher difficulty. And you only unlock a difficulty by beating it with a certain deck, the previous difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to unlock decks, you're usually stuck with the deck you've done the best with.
Mm.
So it's hard to, like, if I have to switch to, like, a blue deck, then I'm going to start at, like, the second difficulty.
Yeah. It also, yeah, it, a lot of the stuff does unlock by, like, it's not just beat a run with this deck, it's, like, beat five runs with this deck. It feels like it's a little bit overkill. But, again, I don't play these types of games that often, so maybe that's, like, pretty standard. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think the later decks, it's just once. Beat it once.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which, like, sure, alright. And, you know, like, it's interesting to see what effect... I think if I was going to play more of this, which, again, you know, maybe I will. Maybe I'll, like, sit down and be like, oh, I really need just something to do for 20 minutes. Let me just boot up Balatro. But, if I was going to give myself a, like, this is what my goal is for progression, it would probably be to unlock all of the decks.
Yeah.
That seems to me like the most, like, here is a set of things, they're in an order, there is a, like, each time you do something with one of them, you get something interesting. You know, like, there's a pretty definite goal, which is to win a run with each one of them. So yeah, just getting the standard, whatever it is, like, white poker chip for each one, that would probably be the extent to, like, what my internal goal would be.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know, I feel like I've done something once and I don't want to do it anymore. What is it, like, the reward system just doesn't click with my brain.
Yeah.
A lot of things don't. That's not the game's fault. That's me. So.
Yeah, it is a fairly specific genre, and I'm not a huge, like, combo engine builder unless it has something else to offer.
Yeah.
It did go, like, pretty viral, which I'm kind of surprised by. I feel like a lot more people than usually play the kinds of games we play on this show feel like have heard of this and were playing it.
I feel like every time I looked at the Steam page, like, at least one person that I know was playing it. Like, okay. That's cool, I guess. At least we are on the zeitgeist with this one. As we are so rarely on the zeitgeist.
Do you think it's because it's poker themed and, like, that's a thing that enough people, like, understand and resonate with to be excited about?
Oh.
Or is this just a genre that, like, more people like, and it's just a few of us that are not as compelled by it? Like, why did this go viral?
I mean, I think the poker thing definitely helps because, like, I'm not a poker player. I don't know, like, the specifics of all the variations of, you know, different ways that people play poker, but I do definitely know the hands, just based on other things that I've played. So that's a good entry point, because that's kind of all you really need to know is the hands. I guess it's the familiarity that just makes it easier for people to, like, kind of pop in, rather than having this be a completely made up, like, all the systems are original. There's nothing here familiar to anchor yourself to. I think it's the accessibility of, like, the poker dressing, I suppose, but I'm sure there's more to it. But yeah, this one really definitely did take off in a way that I'm also a little surprised about.
It's cool to see solo devs doing well.
No, I'm, you know, more power to them. Just because it's not my kind of game doesn't mean that I don't, like, wish them success.
Yeah.
I'm glad when little devs get a big hit. But yeah, I don't know. It may be, we'll see how long this sort of viral flash lands, if it has any staying power.
And I know that kind of thing, because this is something that I was reading about recently, with Lethal Company, is that sort of viral success for especially like solo devs and small teams can be sort of a like double-edged sword. Because I think the devs for Lethal Company were talking about how, like, well, now this is, like, the only thing we can work on. We can't work on other projects because everybody wants us to keep working on Lethal Company. And, like, it's spiraled out of control. I hope that if this is, like, a huge success, then at least they can get the support they need to keep working on it if there's more work that they want to do. I don't know.
Yeah, or make enough money to make something else they want to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always the hope. That's always the hope.
I will say one little bit of thing that I appreciate about it. While the UI is not always perfect at communicating the stuff that you want to know, it is real juicy. Like, for something that's so simple, the fact that, like, when you do, like, a planet card or whatever, it, like, has all these, like, bam, juice, pow, sounds, thing, like, card burns up, you know, like...
Yeah.
It feels good. There's lots of little things that feel good in this game. Like, when the multiplier gets really high, those boxes catch on fire. Like, there's a lot of cute little juicy details that I appreciate. Some nice polish.
Did you guys ever notice that every single object in the game is always moving?
Yeah, I noticed that because I tried to take a screenshot at one point, and screenshots capture the base of the UI, but they do not capture the cards on top of it. I think because those are piped through, like, your graphics card or something, because they're always moving and animated.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I didn't realize that would be the case.
I noticed that as well, but it worked if I tabbed out and then took a screen cap.
Oh, interesting. Okay, good to know.
Yeah. Good workaround, good hack. Also, shout outs to the menu for letting you turn down or up, if you're a crazy person, turn up the screen shake. There's a lot of things that cause your screen to shake in this game. Which is nice. Again, juicy. Absolutely the word for it.
I'm sitting here in the menu, and I just realized you can just click unlock everything.
Oh, is that just a button?
That's just a button.
Huh. Oh. All right.
Or you unlock the, collection, whatever that means.
Hmm.
Oh, so that just... Because that just...
No, it unlocks everything, but it doesn't complete, like, challenges and, like, stickers and stuff.
Okay.
Interesting.
Well. But if even this bit of forward, structure, completion incentive is too much for you, and you want less of it.
Just give me those mechanics, baby. That's all I want.
Yeah. Sure, that's fine. I don't know. I don't have much else to say.
I did, normally I don't pay attention to the music in games, but I kind of like the music in this. It was just, like, very backing track, like, you know, it's
so
not, yeah, it's not in your face or anything, but it's very nice. Normally for a game like this, I would turn off the music completely and just have a YouTube video playing, but I did at least have the music up so that I could hear it.
I think it's just, like, one track throughout the whole game, and it's...
Yeah, I think it is.
It's a licensed track, I think.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
But I don't know. It's good.
Yeah,
it is good. Solid. Yeah,
it feels appropriate for the thing you're doing.
I'm still not tired of it.
I know, me neither. If you're gonna pick one track, I guess you got to make sure it's a good one, and they did that very well.
Yep. Yeah. No, I was at a friend's house the other day. We were He broke out his old Dreamcast, so we were playing some old Dreamcast games. Nice. But at one point, the game we were playing failed, so we switched to an emulator. Because the hardware was just, like, not cooperating. The music from the game was playing, but there was also something else playing in the background under it, and I was like, is this Balatro? Balatro? And Mike went and checked his computer, and he's like, oh, yeah, I guess, like, Steam opened it in the background because I hit a certain button. But I had, like, recognized that song, like, underneath another one because I'd been playing it so often, and it's just that one song on repeat.
So. Yeah, this is going to be one that haunts your dreams forever.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, and it's exactly what it needs to be, which is, you know, like, solid, like, easy to listen to, doesn't get in the way too much when you're going to be hearing it a lot.
Mm-hmm. I really wish also, I wish there was more interface between the tutorial Joker and the player. The tutorial for the game is basically a Joker card floating around telling you the rules. And when you lose a run, sometimes he comes up and like has a little pithy comment. I think my favorite one was, he's kind of mean, but not in like too mean of a way. Yeah. I think my favorite one was like, I'm literally a fool, what's your excuse? But I don't know. I think just anything to like give this game a little bit more, not even narrative, but like humanity? Is that the word I'm looking for?
Character?
Yeah, character, or just like just something to like keep you anchored or like hooked in a little bit in a way that like mechanics just don't do it for me. And I get it. Again, I'll say this as many times as I need to, like, this is purely a me thing, and this is not the type of game I usually play, and I'm aware of that and trying to be as objective as possible, even though this isn't my bag. But like, I don't know, just a little bit of a little crumb of interaction with something other than a card, I don't know.
Or at least with a card that talks to me.
Yeah, at least with a card that talks to me.
That was one of the most compelling things when you started playing Inscription, is the fact mm-hmm. that one of the cards talked to you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, everything else was like, oh, it's a mechanical game, but this card understands that we are playing this game and is talking to me. What the fuck is up with that? Like, was mm-hmm. a great hook.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's why Act 1 of Inscription was so good.
Yeah, we've done that episode. You can
and then
go
I'm
back
not going to talk about it.
Yeah, you can go back and listen to our thoughts on the various acts of Inscription. But Act 1 was very compelling as a mm-hmm. deck builder, and little things like that are part of the reason why. And it also had some like real broken combos that you could discover. But you didn't need to discover super broken combos in order to play the game well and beat a run. It was just like a fun, stupid feeling bonus when it happened.
Yeah. It also feels like there was, and like, I don't want to compare this game too much to Inscription, and I feel like maybe it's a very valid reason to not have the Joker card talk to you more often, to avoid explicitly drawing comparisons to Inscription. But man, it did feel like there was a lot more variety in kind of what you could do that worked in Inscription in ways that was surprising and delightful.
Yeah, I feel like one of the nice benefits of a combo engine game could be, like, doesn't have to be, but could be finding different strategies, right? Like finding the combo that's exciting and works that you didn't expect. But I didn't feel a lot of that with this. I felt, as we said, like I felt like there was a thing that you needed to do, which was get a good multiplier Joker as quickly as possible. And then everything else was kind of trivial.
Yeah, there's nothing like, you know, like rendering the boss of the act completely unable to do any damage to you because you're a little bit stinky.
Yep. Yeah, or poisoning the moon.
Yeah, you know, pure absurdity. I guess that's what it comes down to. Is just based on kind of how this game was described to me, kind of the way it was sold was I was hoping for more of that kind of absurdity, that wasn't really present, which is fine. Again, this is a different game, and I'm not actually trying to draw the comparison, even though I am a little bit. Sorry, sorry, Dev.
We're
it's a good
it,
game.
But we feel bad about it.
yeah, we're doing it, but we feel bad about it. That being said, I did play several hours in a very short span of time.
I was gonna say, like, for a game that I feel like I'm maybe, like, I don't know how much I'm gonna play in the future, I did play it for 14 hours. So.
Yeah, I think I only logged about 10, but I also procrastinated, and most of that was over, like, a day and a half. So, there's that. That speaks for itself, I think.
I'm trying to look at, like, what's the rarest achievement I have? Because these achievements are all pretty well achieved by most people. I have 18.1% of players for You Get What You Get, which is win a run without ever re-rolling the shop. Which I think I just did by accident, because, like, I was buying so many cards that I just never had the money to reroll the shop.
Yeah. That's one of those things. It's like, I tried to avoid rerolling, just in order to save money, because I don't know, it's like, well, you're gonna reroll and you're not gonna get anything that you want, so what's the point? The same with trying to avoid using my discards. I tended to like strategies that were based upon, like, you get things if you don't use discards. Like, it, you know, it will give you an extra multiplier on your card if you don't use a discard, or you get extra money if you don't use your discards. I felt like that made the game more fun to play, rather than just being like, I don't like these cards, let's dump them. Trying to work around what you have.
Yeah, because otherwise I felt like I was always just discarding until I got a straight, and then playing the straight.
Yeah.
The run where every time I dealt, I got a flush of some kind was that was kind of fun. That felt like a good combo.
You're lucky that you didn't get the boss blind that prevents you from using the same type of hand more than once in the round.
I leaned that deck red pretty heavily because I, you know, the red ones were better for me. I did get a boss that was like blocks all diamond cards, which was therefore all red cards. But luckily I had the boss reroll voucher, so I was able to reroll it to something else.
Yeah, this was like such a stupid mistake that I made. I had one card that that counted all cards as face cards. So, you know, sometimes a face card will get you an extra multiplier. Sometimes a face card will get you some extra money every time it's scored. And I was like right before the boss fight, and I knew what the boss fight was. It was all face cards are negated. And I knew that, and I was looking at my cards thinking, do I want to get rid of this Joker? And it just completely fled my brain. So I got to the boss fight and just couldn't do anything until I sold that card. It was very silly.
Luckily, they do let you sell the card mid fight, or it wouldn't. You'd be just fucking stuck sometimes. I will say, I feel like I lost several runs because I made stupid mistakes. Because I didn't realize that I'd clicked the wrong card and I wasn't playing the straight that I thought I was. Or
I did that all the time.
Yeah.
It was that, or accidentally hitting discard when I meant to play it, or the other way around, accidentally playing when I meant to discard. That's just me not paying attention. I don't think that's like a fault of the UI. I think that's
attention. You could maybe build UI to like avoid that a little bit more, but like the UI was fine. It's you gotta pay more attention. Yeah, I ended up in the run where I had that flush thing. I had that card, the shortcut card, where you can build straights without, like, with gaps. And I ended up having to sell that Joker because I was trying to play flushes because I had that super leveled up, and I was accidentally getting straight flushes sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, shoot, I need to not, like, straight flush is level 2, whereas flush is level, like, 7. I need to not be playing straight flushes. Let me just sell that Joker.
Yeah,
so many times. I've avoided when I was playing flushes, and you have to avoid all the different, like, 4-of-a-kind, 5-of-a-kind full houses.
Yeah. I ran into a similar thing where I had leveled up pairs a bunch, because I figure, you know, even if you get kind of a crappy hand, that still gives you something to play that's worth something. But my two pairs was so underleveled that it was never, ever worth it to play two pairs rather than just a single pair, which was, it's silly. It feels silly and it feels wrong, but, you know, it's kind of fun, I guess.
Yeah, we didn't talk about secret hands. The game, in addition to the normal poker hands, there's also a set of secret hands that you can't get in a normal 52-card deck, like a flush house, which is a full house that is all of the same suit.
Yeah.
Which, you know, shouldn't be possible, but is possible if you can, like, modify your suits and stuff. And so, like, discovering a new secret hand was kind of a joy moment. Like, that was always pretty funny.
Yeah, and upgrades for those hands does not show up until you actually played one.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that. I'm like, whoa, wait, Ceres, like, where did that planet, I haven't seen that planet card come from, like, come up before. What is that? And then I looked up, like, I looked at it, and it's like, upgrades, flush house. And I'm like, oh, I only just learned about that hand. I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was very cute. And that was always kind of like a fun, silly moment. I wish there had been more of that kind of moment.
Yeah. Especially because it, and maybe I'm off base, but it feels like there was a lot of potential for that kind of stuff, just within the framework of, you know, regular bicycle deck, poker hands, etc.
But yeah, that's Balatro. Any other last thoughts on that? Comments people want to make?
Not particularly, no. You were right. There's not a lot to say about. We're really wringing this one dry.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
All right. Well, shall I talk about the next game then?
Yeah, sure. Great.
Yeah. So next up, we are going to be playing Chance of Sennar, which is a game from 2023 by Rundisk, published by Focus Entertainment. It's available a bunch of places, including the Switch, which maybe I'll just get it for the Switch. But yeah, it is a language discovery game where the characters speak with specific symbols, and they're like, you know, there's writing in the world, and your goal is to catalog what each of the symbols means. And my understanding is you can, like, leave yourself notes about the symbols and things like that as you go through to kind of try and help you, like, translate stuff. So I'm looking forward to it. I've heard good things. And I'm excited to try it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like a good, I don't know, I like a good language-based framework.
Yeah.
I like detective games.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
We are big fans of detective games here on this channel. Of mysteries.
Yeah, mysteries and time loops, and especially a time loop mystery. Whew. Ooh. You speak in my language.
Speaking of which, if you are a fan of Outer Wilds, by the way, they just released a plush of Rybek, the banjo player.
Ooh! That's fun. I need to play the DLC, because I never played it.
Oh, it's good. It's very good.
I need to do that. I really need to do that.
It's
yeah.
more Outer Wildsy goodness.
Mm-hmm.
With a little bit of a more spook flavor than the base game.
Yeah, gotcha.
But yeah. Not to spoil, I won't spoil what it actually is, but I was watching a streamer playing the DLC, and a thing occurred that's based on, like, it happens on each loop at a particular time. And the first time the streamer saw it, he had, like, watched it happen and went, wow, what a very Outer Wilds thing to happen. And I was like, yeah, no, you're not wrong.
That's just how it is sometimes.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think we've done a pod, gang. I think we did it.
Yep. So if people wanna talk about Chance of Sinar, or they in general want to come say hi and just chat in our Discord, bug Kelsa to play Echoes of the Eye.
Yeah.
So how can they find us?
You can find us on our Linktree, linktree.ee/feedbackforcepodcast. The link to our SoundCloud with all the episodes is there. The link to Spotify is there. The Discord link is there. Also, Blue California. Check that out. Link to Wintermore Tactics Club. Forever and always. Definitely.
Instagram page.
And link to Escher, the king of the boys.
Yep.
Looking very kingly.
Yeah, he's been a good boy.
Is he still horny? Is he still trying to
occasionally, but like he's it's only intermittent. A lot of times he is just his normal little gecko self.
Okay.
I'm getting some blueberries in on Monday, so I'm gonna try giving him a blueberry as a treat if he likes it.
I would like a blueberry as a treat. Maybe I get some. Maybe I get some blueberries. Maybe I want a treat.
Yeah. You have the advantage of commerce and opposable thumbs.
I know. Yeah, I've also got frozen mangoes that I need to eat before I get any more. I love a good frozen fruit. What is it about fruit being like a little bit frozen that just makes it so much better? I don't know.
I mean,
yeah,
in a lot of cases, fruits are better frozen because you can freeze them at the when they're ripe.
That's true. Mm. Yeah, that's true. But I like to eat it still a little bit frozen is the thing. Not like solid frozen. Like, I'm not going to just chomp down on a frozen cube of mango and wreck my teeth, but...
Well, you know, you say that, but so here's my weird food tip. One of my favorite, like late snack, like, oh, I really want to have a fun tasty snack, but I don't you know, like I it's late at night, I don't want to eat anything heavy, or like I don't want to ruin my appetite, or you know, whatever. One of my favorite snacks, frozen peas. Just fill a bowl with frozen green peas and eat them still frozen. They're like very crunchy. They got like a nice light mild flavor. They fill you up without like, you know, without being like potato chips where like you can't stop eating them and then you ruin your appetite. Really, really solid treat.
You know, I think I might have some peas in the freezer. Maybe I try this today. That's a wild suggestion, but it just might work. I believe you.
Yeah,
I believe you. I like a little crunchy thing. I like a little crunchy. A little crunch.
Yeah. I also have frozen peas.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what we're all doing today.
Try it. See what you think.
Dumping an entire bag of frozen peas directly into my gaping maw.
Yeah, report back on the Discord from what you thought.
Yeah. All right. Well,
we'll see all in a couple weeks, unless it takes us longer to play Chance of Sinar, in which case it'll be more than a couple weeks.
Yeah, which it might. This one's a little bit of a long one, but that's fine. That gives you, dear listener, more time to eat frozen peas. So get to it, and we'll see y'all next time. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.